shit, be hard to.
If it helps people just know a little bit what the agenda is, then by all means, you know. So quite a beautiful parsha Tevet. Just start with a quick summary overview of the parsha. The parsha begins with more or less the birth of Yaakov and Esav. They both come into this world after many years. Rivka, after being barren, and Yitzchak having no children, became pregnant, and they finally had these two children. And then continues that Avraham Avinu dies. And Yaakov was in the middle of preparing the suda for the mourners, a consolation meal, which is usually like lentils, some eggs in the ground, which is symbolic to life, which goes round. And Esav comes in from the fields, starving, hungry, and decided to, you know, sell his birthright for just a simple bowl of red kind of soup. And, you know, he mocked it, went to his friends, etc. Parsha continues. Esav finds himself a wife, Yehudit. And then Avinu tells Esav he now wants to give him some blessings, go out to the fields, go and get some game. Rivka overhears. She then tells Yaakov, you know, what to do, how to kind of, you know, get Yitzchak to give her son Yaakov the blessings. And finally, toward the end of the parsha, Rivka basically sends Yaakov for his own safety reasons, because now Esav is on the loose, he's waiting for the mourning period to be over, and he's going to hunt Yaakov now, because he's extremely, extremely annoyed. Just in a nutshell, the parsha. So the first pasuk begins, Ve'ele told Yitzchak ben Abraham, Abraham holid et Yitzchak. The pasuk over here, Chazal says, coming to just re-emphasize that Yitzchak was for sure the son of Avraham Avinu. As we know, Sarah and Menu didn't have a child for many, many years, and suddenly, after being taken by Abimelech, she spends the weekend over there. The next thing we know, within 9 months, she's suddenly pregnant. So kind of, you know, people on the outside, the Letzaneh Hador, the mock of the generation, say, this child must be from Abimelech, not from Avraham Avinu. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made Yitzchak's appearance, his whole face, facial features, resemble, almost identical to Avraham Avinu. And this way it was emphasized for sure, these are the generation of Yitzchak ben Abraham, Avraham holy at Yitzchak, Abraham fathered, begot Yitzchak. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein answered the question on the first Rashi. The Eled Toldot Yitzchak, Yaakov Esav Hamun Maparsha. Who are the Toldot of Yitzchak? Yaakov and Esav. What's the big chiddush over here? You look one or two psukim later, and we know Yitzchak had two children, Yaakov and Esav. So what's the chiddush? What's Rashi coming to alert us to over here? So he explained the following idea. If you look towards the second part of the passage where it says Abraham Hori Ed Yitzchak, it wasn't just he physically resembled him. Avraham Avinu taught his Torah to Yitzchak. He brought him up in Derech HaTorah. Whatever he knew, he passed on his whole Masorah to Yitzchak. And in turn, Yitzchak Avinu was mechanech his children in the same manner. He taught Yaakov and Esav how to be good Jews. And yet, what do we find? We find that he had a son, Esav, who totally went off the Derech. So Moshe comes on to tell us, the Torah is coming to alert us to the fact, such a great guy, brought such a great home, was ended up having with a son who went off the derech. Kosher came how we, when it comes to being mechanech our children in the right time, is that we should realize that we have to, the education of children is so, so important. If Yitzchak could put in everything and end up with a child who went off the derech, how much more so we have to take it so seriously when we educate our children in the Derech HaTorah. Because he says that the Eled told that Yaakov and Esav, Yaakov and Esav, is this Yaakov who mentioned in the parsha that he ended up with one tzaddik and one Rasha? Therefore, he's saying that if Yitzchak Avinu ended up with a child who went off the earth, despite Abraham holding Yitzchak, despite Abraham doing the best for him, then it can just as well happen to us. And now Yitzchak married Rivka at the age of 3 years old. She had to be Rori Labia. And now the Torah tells us, despite her coming from such bad family background, father and brothers, she still remained a very, very pure girl. Now they come to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They want kids. Yitzhak came one corner, Rivka came the other corner. She was barren, and Hashem answered them, "Vatahar Rivka Ishta." The Rashi tells us, a very famous Rashi, "Vayetar Lo." Hashem answered him, "Lo v'lo la." He answered the prayers of Yitzhak and not Rivka, although they both prayed. Why? She'ei domet tefillah tzadik ben tzadik or tzadik ben rasha. You can't compare the tefillah of a tzadik Yitzhak, who's the son of a tzadik Abraham, to a tzadikes Rivka, who's the child of Besuel. What exactly does that mean? We see other conflicting gemaras which say that a tzadik doesn't stand in the place that Baal Tshuva is. Baal Tshuva is in a very, very high madrega. Yet Rivka, we see what we just mentioned before, despite living amongst the worst kind of people, she ended up being such a tzadikah. Surely her tefillah should have been greater. So the general answer that we give is, what's the difference between a Baal Tshuva and an FFB? Is that a person who just brought up from, he doesn't necessarily have the same appreciation and the same enthusiasm for keeping Torah mitzvahs, because all his life he's wearing tzitzis, all his life keeping Shabbos. Therefore it's not as exciting. Suddenly a person, when they're older and more mature, take on the yoke of Torah, every mitzvah is so exciting. You go buy a Lulav and Esther, you go and build a sukkah, and you go and buy a new beautiful tefillin, and you go buy a Mehudah mitzvah, everything's exciting. But what happened over here, Yitzhak Avinu, despite being a tzaddik ben tzaddik, he looked at life and he kept his Torah mitzvahs as if it was the first time that he kept it, with the same enthusiasm of Baal Tshuva. Therefore in that respect, you can't compare a tzaddik ben tzaddik who's keeping Torah with such enthusiasm for the first time to a tzaddik ben rasha, who also kept in such excitement, but since it was a greater ordeal for him because of he's born into it, it's not as great a test, therefore his prayers in this situation were answered over hers. That's one idea. But I heard another idea from Rabbi Lev. You should have a refuah shleima in his throat. He says, if you medayek in Rashi, en doime tefillah, you can't compare the tefillah of a tzaddik ben tzaddik to a tzaddik ben rasha. When a person has children, what are they daven for? A person who's come from big yichus, what does he want his child to be? He wants his child to be like his father. You pray your children be like your parents, because that's what you know to be the best way. Whereas someone who doesn't know any better, someone who comes from a checkered past and from bad stock, what are they going to daven? What do they want children? They don't even know why they want children. But a tzaddik ben tzaddik, when they daven, they know the value, they know the achievements, they know the potential, what a Jewish child can do. So he said, "Ein dome tefillah tzaddik." You can't compare the actual tefillah, what the tzaddik ben tzaddik is davening for, than that which the tzaddik ben rasha is davening for. Clear? Now I'm going to tell you a vort over here, which is one of the beautiful things on the parsha. It's from Yosef Haim Zonnenfeld. And he was asked the following question. We know Yitzhak and Rivka were married for quite a long time. They were married for 20 years before having children. The first 10 years, she was still married at 3, still 13. She had to wait to see if she was going to have children, because although she wasn't yet ready, she was still a young girl. But from 13 onwards, there's a halakha that if a man's married for 10 years with no children, he's got to divorce his wife or remarry somebody else, because he has a mitzvah to have children. And we actually learned it from Avraham Avinu. You see, Avraham Avinu, on 10 years of marriage, Sarah Imenu goes and tells him, go and take a maidservant as a wife. They were married for much longer than 10 years. So the answer is that sometimes a person not able to have children, chutz la'aretz. But there's a schus of living in the Holy Land. When a person comes to live in Eretz Yisrael, there's a special schus that you're able to have children over here. But if you've come to live in Eretz Yisrael, and still a person wasn't blessed with children, then the 10 years start from there. So Avraham Avinu, although he's married for many, many years, only after 10 years of living in Eretz Yisrael, did he then take a concubine, did he then take the maidservant Hagar. So what happened to Rivka? 10 years, we said till 13, after 10 years now elapsed, they're davening hard. Because Yitzhak, because he was an Ola Tamima, it wasn't so fitting for him to take a maidservant, because he was such a pure soul. Therefore he burst out with tefillah, trying to break and flood the gates of Shemaim to answer, to be answered. And what do we find? If you look in Rashi, where it says, Vayetala Hashem, it says Hashem answered him. Is this to say Hashem conceded to him? Hashem was persuaded by him. The rest of the time, Jonathan was asked, what was so difficult? The guy's married for 20 years without kids. Is it so much to ask for Kodesh Baruch Hu that the Pasuk has to come and say, Chazal say, that he was persuaded and he was conceded and he really, really, Hashem was kind of was holding back. Why would Hashem hold back children from Yitzhak Avinu? For what reason? So he said like this. All the Avos were originally destined to live 180 years. Yaakov Avinu in reverse lost 33 years of his life because for whatever reason on his Madrega, to be very careful to say, on his Madrega, due to having, you know, a brother who wanted to kill him, an uncle who robbed him, and a daughter who was raped, and the brothers who sold him, he had a hard life. And therefore, since he got affected by his life and he complained, and we see in Parashas Vayigash, therefore, for the 33 words of complaint mentioned over there, he lost 33 years of his life, and therefore he lived 147. Yitzchak lived a full allotted time. Oded Tamima, he lived 180. But Avram Avinu lived to 175. Avram was supposed to live to 180 as well. So why did Avram lose 5 years? So Mefarshim explained that since he lived in the same time of Esav, Esav now was 15 years old, Yotzei L'Tarbus Ra, he went totally, he was a disgrace to the family. Hashem didn't feel it was correct that Avram Avinu should be in the same generation alive as his little grandson who's totally disgracing him wherever he goes. Therefore Hashem reduced from Avram Avinu's life 5 years in order that he shouldn't be disgraced. So Yosef Chaim explains, really according to the original plan, Yaakov and Esav were supposed to be born into this world 5 years later. That's why Hashem was holding back. But now that Yitzchak prayed and treated the Kodesh Baruch Hu in such a manner, Hashem couldn't help but giving in and saying, okay, I've heard enough, I'm going to have to give you a child. And he then said, if you take the word Vayetar Lo Hashem, it adds up to 748, which is the exact match of Chamesh Shanim. That Vayater Lo Hashem, through Hashem answering him, it caused 5 years. 5 years was the loss of the life taken from Avram Avinu. And Rav Aaron Kotler himself, when he heard this, he said it must be this, such a gematria in the book could only be with someone who had Ruach HaKodesh. I actually just remember that I missed out a little part of what he said over there. I'll just quickly backtrack. He brought a mantra from the Chatham Sofer. Chatham Sofer, once a man came to him telling him that his wife was in active labour and it was very, very difficult, and she was in total agony and needed a bracha that everything should go well and that the baby should come out as soon as possible. So when he went to the Chatham Sofer, he looked at me and said, look, I'm really sorry, I can't help you. He said, what do you mean you can't help me? Who am I going to rely on? God Lador, who else can I go to? He said, look, there's a Gemara in Kiddushin, the Ayin Beis on base, and the Gemara over there in the top, it says like when Rabbi Akiva was born, we know that Rabbi Akiva, Rebbe died, and when Rabbi Ashi born, Rab died, and it goes through a whole power of all the different people. But when one tzaddik comes into the world, another tzaddik leaves. The Gemara there says, a tzaddik, when a tzaddik leaves this world, he only leaves this world when another tzaddik comes in to replace him. And it's learned from, we see from the Gemara. So the Chassam Sofer said, I see Baruch HaKodesh, your child born, about to be born, is going to be such a great child, that by me, such a big tzaddik, that by me doubling for your wife to give birth early, I'm going to be causing the loss of life of another tzaddik, who's going to have to go because of you. And therefore, that sort of blood on his level, he didn't want to have on his fingers.
Who was that?
The Chassam Sofer. Vatahar Rivka Ishta. We always know the most important rule in Torah. Every word has to have relevance. Every word must never be superfluous. Vatahar Rivka Ishta. What do you mean? And Rivka, his wife, conceived. Vatahar Rivka. Rivka conceived. Or Vatahar Ishta. We know who Rivka is. Choose one or the other. Why does the pastor go to waste an extra word to tell you Vatahar Rivka Ishta? So the Klichenda asked this question. If you go back and we look at Parashas Lech Lecha, when Avram Avinu and Sarai, Avram and Sarai at the time never had any children, the Kli Yarka says over there that Hashem says to Sarai, your name will no longer be called Sarai. Your name is going to be Sarah from now on. Mashma, that her name, her real name was Sarah, but it was just changed to Sarai for a period of time. As being called Sarai, she wasn't able to have any children. She had to now change her name. How did she change her name? She took the Yud from her name. Hashem said there's a Yud in your name. Yud is 10. 5. Hey is always the power to create. Ve'elu Torah Hashemayim Be'hibaram. In there being created, the Hey is always the power to create. So Yud is 10. She took 5 and gave Aaron 5. So she had Yud. You take 5 off the Yud, you end up with Hey. Her name became Sarah. That was 5. And the other Hey from her name was given to Abraham, from Abraham to Abraham. The gematrias of their name as a couple stay the same. If you add up Sarai and Abraham, it's exactly the same as Sarah and Abraham. There's no change in the couple, just that the power was lying with Sarah and Manu. So the Kli Chemdah comes along over here and says, over here we see that Rivka and Manu, although she had never and didn't have any children yet, she didn't have to change her name. She was able to conceive with that same name. Vatah Rivka Ishto. She was still Rivka as she remained his wife. The pasuk continues, Vayitrotsu habanim bekirba. Now she finally conceived and she felt this big struggle in her womb. And she said to herself, Im kein, lama ze anochi? Why is this to me? And now she went to seek advice and shame, able to find out exactly what was doing, why she was feeling such pain. What used to happen? When she would go past the place of Avodah Zarah, she would feel intense kicking in her womb, as if someone was trying to get out. And when she went past the place of the Beit Medrash, a place of Torah, she would also feel the same sort of struggle. So the question over here, the side point, is that we know really a person shouldn't be walking around Avodah Zarah areas. The answer is, in the same way that Sarah Imenu used to be Makara people, so too Rivka. She's hanging out in a certain area because she used to walk past with a view of failing Hashem's name in the world. That's why she was doing it Le'Ta'eles, not just done to walk around in the wrong areas where we could kind of get affected. So she goes to Shem Be'eva and she's told there are two nations. Shtei Goyim Be'Nech. There are two nations in your womb. And the days came and one will serve the other. And it seems that she was okay with that. Why was she okay? Imagine someone being told, you're going to have a tzaddik and you have a rasha in your stomach. How are you going to feel? So why was she consoled? It's because up until then, she didn't know she had two children. She said one guy is absolutely schizophrenic. So one guy is just a tzaddik and rasha combined in one person. So once she was reassured that there were two, at least she had one normal child, then she was already at peace. But we see in the pasuk, really, Rivka Imenu was supposed to be the mother of the Shvatim. She was supposed to have 12 children. But she says, Lama Zeh Anochi. She found it so hard. Lama Zeh, Zeh's mantra 12. Why is this to me? This is what labor is all about, and this is what childbearing is. I can't cope with this. And therefore Hashem took that source away from her and passed it down, that Yaakov ended up having the 12. But according to the original plan, Rivka Imenu was supposed to have the 12 Shvatim. And what exactly were they fighting about?
You're saying she was complaining about the pain?
The pain was so hard she couldn't understand. She says that Rivka experienced a pregnancy that no woman in this world has ever experienced. And when she went through such a struggle in her womb for these nine months or whatever, but she was born much earlier than that. But for that time, she couldn't bear and control that sort of pain, that physical pain that was there. What in the Ma'am Loez, it says that.
Physical pain.
She had a short pregnancy.
Yeah, I think she was, I think, 6 months or 7 months.
But Tamar had a short pregnancy.
Yeah, once they all did, but like sometimes 6, 5.
Well, where's the book about the schizophrenic?
I know the main one. Yeah. No, that I've heard from one. It's quite a known voice.
If she was
going to
have the 12 tribes after this, then she wouldn't have that struggle again. Like, fair enough, now it's painful, but why afterwards would it be painful?
At this point in time, sometimes is that when a woman has a baby, she'd actually have to bring a certain korban of Nadarim, I think it was. Because when a woman has a baby, at that point, she's never another child again. Each time a woman experiences such a labour, she's like, I'll never do this again. Yet, she doesn't mean it, because we see she has more children after that. But when a person's going through such difficulty, they don't think any further. Right now, I can't take this. So she was just thinking for that. But sometimes we see an idea that when a tzaddik utters something, Hashem has to, Moshe Rabbeinu, he said, you know, Mechen iman nam yisifrecha, wipe me out from your book. Hashem partially took him out from Parsha to Tzara, because the tzaddik already spoke. That's my own answer, and if it fits in. So what are they fighting for? They're fighting from Olam Hazen, Olam Haba. Yitzhak Avin, Yaakov wanted Olam Haba, and Esav wanted to run Olam Hazeh. So Rav Lech said, what's the problem?
Okay,
one idea. He said, what's the problem? He said, if two people are fighting for two different things and both things are available, let each one take whatever they want. You take Olam Haba, take the next world, spirituality, take this world, physicality. So he answers that the thing is, Yaakov realized that the only way to arrive to Olam Haba is through this world. As a Jew, we understand that we use the physical to uplift. Other religions, as we've mentioned in Rabbi Shah's Hashkafashir, you know, there everything is abstaining, not indulging. But with Torah, it's the total opposite. You have to use this world. You have to be able to use this world, use the... It's Olam Asiyah. This is the world of doing, world of action. That every action that we do, we're able to elevate to Hamadrega. As it says in Pirkei Avot, that this world is a prosdom. This world is a corridor. We prepare ourselves in Olam Hazeh, Olam Ba. Hashem could just create everybody and just put them straight there, but it wouldn't work like that. Person wouldn't feel they earned something. Hashem put us here to deal with Bechira, to deal with many, many aspects of being appreciative and knowing that we've worked hard for something to get to the destination that we want to get. Okay.
So how was the what did they fight?
Sorry?
Therefore, A7, they were fighting exactly at which point? What was
there? It's very hard to understand what these things are because, you know, they're two babies. Some say it's the different malachim above them. They're assigning angels. They just want control over this or control over that. Or haven't looked into it that deeply, but just on the surface. And now we have a wonderful pasuk which says, that Yitzchak loved Esav, for game was in his mouth, and Rivka loves Yaakov. It's a Kseva Bulitsky grammatical question over here. One pasuk, and it says Yitzchak loved, in the past tense, he loved Esav, for the game was in his mouth, and when it comes to Rivka loving Yaakov, she loves him without giving a reason. It just says straight out. Just say where the pasuk is. It's in
Kaf.
Yeah, that's right. But yeah, have Yitzhak et Esav, Kitzai Befiv, the Rivka Oheves et Yaakov. So the Dibna Magid explains the idea like this. In the secular world today, we see that a person is judged by his achievements. A person can be, you know, the world champion for 5 years and get gold medal for 400 meter sprint, whatever, hurdles, whatever it's called. But in the last year, someone beat his record and now the new world record set. All his achievements down the drain. Whatever your past is, you're known for your past, not for your future. Whatever you're doing, whatever has been done, that's what you're known for those achievements. When it came to Esav, he was there because he used to bring gain to his father. The love was based on what he used to do. Masha Enkin, when it comes to something of Ruchnias, comes to doing Torah and mitzvahs, it's an everlasting thing. Rivka loves continuation. It never stops. It's not finite. But anything today, you go out there, you ask someone, you know, Shem mentioned this recently, what do you do? He says, I'm a doctor. He defines himself by what he does. As long as he's a doctor, he's called a success. But if he's a dustbin driver, so he's a failure. He's looked at what his actions are, what he is, what he's doing. With Torah, no, it's a constant love. Hashem loves us, we love him. We look up, we look upwards to see it's a continuous future. When it comes to spirituality, Rivka always loved Yaakov, totally always growing in the spiritual way. In the spiritual way. Now, I read this little idea over here. I'm going to try and express it in the best way I can. There was a recent sale in Feldheim in Beit Shemesh, so I came across it. It has a sefer called Shurim of Rav Mordechai Miller, some great sefer. So it's very, very deeper sort of ideas, but I'll just try and, in a nutshell, try and share an idea which I hope that I understood to some degree.
This is for this week.
Yeah, this question. Now, if you turn to Perek Kav Zayin, the following happens. And it came to pass, Yitzchak now became old, his eyes became weak. Different reasons why his eyes became weak. Some say when he was in the Akeda, a tear of the Malach dropped in his eyes and it started progressing, getting weak. Others say that Esau's wives used to basically light incense to their Avodah Zarah, and that eventually smoked him. The other opinion says that Hashem didn't want him really to see how bad Esau was, and therefore he preferred that he couldn't even see him, as opposed to really seeing how bad his own son is. And now he comes along, he calls Esau his older child, and he says, "Look, son, here I am." He said, "I've become old now. I don't know how long more I'm going to live, because there's a concept that a person doesn't always outlive their parents. Since Sarah and Imenu lived 127, and now at this point, Yitzchak was 123, so it kind of drew for concern for him. Although he ended up living another, till 180, at that point he didn't know what his future was going to be. And then he said to him, "Look, go pick up your weapons, take your bows and arrows, and go out to the field, and catch for me some game." If you look over there, I'm just emphasize one or two words. Vetzora li, tida, ve'asa li, and make me delicacies, kasha hasi, make delicacies as I like, ve'havia li, and bring it to me. Three times over here we see the word li in one passage. Who is he talking to? Yeah? Me. And yet to think for one second that what's he asking for? Go bring me some meat. I love meat. Go and bring me the meat like I love. Go out there and go and bring me some lovely veal. As you know, I like it. What's going on over here? Well, Yitzchak suddenly become indulging in the physicality. Chas v'shalom, that we should think that our forefather Yitzchak was so dependent on physicality. Furthermore, he actually brings a pasuk in Shmuel where it says, "I'm 80 years old and I have no taste anymore." As we mentioned last week in the shiur, that person, as they get older, their tithes are all diminished. Then we find Rivka comes along. She hears what's going on to Esav, and she goes to tell Yaakov, her son, saying, "I've heard what your father's about to do. He went and told your brother Esav, Havia Li." Again, Sayyid Vasa Li Matam. She repeats, "Oh, Li, Li, Li. And you better go. He wants to bless him before he dies." So she says, "Look, now, my child, listen to my voice. Shema Bekoili. La She'ani Metzavel, as I'm commanding you. Go and bring Bekach Li." Now she says the same word. Kach Li. Bring for me. Bring to me. Shnei Gideizim, go and bring two sheep over there from the lot. Go to the sheep and bring me two deers, and I'll prepare it for your father as I like it. The Rashi says over here, when on the word kasher ahav, ki tam hagadi ketam tzvi. There was no difference in the taste when it came to whether it was gadi or tzvi, deer or goat. It had the same taste. Yet we find that Esav goes to such depths to go out there. It had no difference in taste. What difference, would it make if he's going to bring one or the other? We know Esav was renowned for the mitzvah of Kibbutz Av V'Em. And in a nutshell, Rav Miller comes to express the following idea. That when a person does a mitzvah, what was tasty for Yitzchak? It wasn't the physical. It wasn't the physical meat. It was the Kibbutz Av V'Em that went into the food. He used to get dressed, he used to go out to passion, he used to go to the highest madriga of wanting to honor his father. Imagine how great Esav's kibbutz av v'em was. So because he did everything, Yitzchak said, "Again, do it for me, hunt it for me, bring it for me," but the whole time have in mind kavana for me to make it as I like it, in order that I can taste the kibbutz av v'em. He mentions that with everything we do in our lives, we're able to infuse kedusha, no matter whatever we do. Every opportunity we have, you never know how you can tap into Kedusha to do a mitzvah, to do, if we just have the right kavanas in what we're doing. I'm not sure it fits in perfectly here, but I once read the Chofetz Chaim writes that there's so many mitzvahs that we do on a day-to-day basis that we don't think that we're performing mitzvahs, therefore we're not rewarded as if it's a mitzvah. And he gives an example. He says a mitzvah from the Torah that you have to pay your worker in the correct time. You shouldn't delay wages. So the Chofetz Chaim, when you go into a minicab, and you're paying at the end for your fare, for your 20 shekels, 30 shekels, you're fulfilling a mitzvah d'oraisa. But if you don't realize, and you don't think that right now I'm fulfilling a mitzvah, you don't get the star for it. A person sits and have a haircut and saying, "Now I'm not cutting off the corners of my face, of my hair, the corners of my beard, whatever." He's again Mikhail Mitzov, not chopping off your corners. So many things we don't realize. We learn, including myself, obviously I'm speaking to my pressure, I speak to myself, that if we really learn, you know, what our mitzvahs are, is all 613, whatever we can are able to do, and we have the right kavanas, when we do them, we get much, much more reward, and then we bring Hashem into our life in every aspect. And I want to end with this final vort, which is a really a beautiful vilagon. I just remember one more thing I wanted to mention as a side point. We see it says by Rivka, Shema Bekoli, listen to my voice. And it reminded me, just brought me a Shemais. In Shemais, when Moshe Rabbeinu meets Kodesh Baruch Hu at the burning bush, Hashem says to him, "Veshamu lekolecha, they will listen to your voice." V'yam Moshe v'yomer hem lo yaminu li v'lo yishmu bekoli. Hashem told him, they will listen to your voice. Moshe, they will listen to my voice. How could it be such a thing? So I saw one of the Mefarshim, I can't quote it, but I'm not sure which one, but one of the Mefarshim Gedola says, look at the words carefully. V'shamu le kolecha, Hashem says, and Moshe says, v'lo yishmu bekoli. They don't listen. It wasn't in lekoli and bekoli, right? So one of the Mefarshim explained, I think it would have been Orach Chaim. He says there's a superficial voice and there's a sound of the voice that comes from within. Lekoli, you just hear someone stand there speaking. But when they go in here, Hashem says they're going to hear you. They're going to physically, they're going to listen to you. He says Moshe says they're not going to listen to Bekoli, my voice. Not really going to believe who I am. Not going to really believe that I'm going to be the one to save the Jewish people. So just over here, we come by Rivka. It says the same lashon over here. The atah b'ni shma bekoli. Listen to my voice. Don't listen to the external voices of just words. Listen to what I'm saying. I know what I'm telling you. These brachas are so important. Be careful. Go and quickly go. Go and, you know, bring the food. She, like as if from like a deeper insight, Bekoli, she was talking from more of within than more as an external. Fits in okay over here. Finally, now he brings the food, and we come to the most famous line known throughout through the world. Hakol kol Yaakov v'hayadayim yedei Esav. Yitzchak suddenly comes along and he's a little bit startled, a bit confused, and he says that the voice is the voice of Jacob. But when he feels, because she went and Rivka went and gave him the right gloves and different clothes, the hunting clothes that Esav used to wear, therefore she said the hands are the hands of Esav. So is the Vilna Gaon, the most beautiful point over here. If you look at the word kol, the word kol is spelled without a vav, and when you read it without a vav, it reads kal. Hakal kol Yaakov ve'yadam ve'esav. He says, when the voice of Yaakov is light, when the voice of Yaakov is weak, when the voice of Yaakov not being heard, what is that voice? That's the sound of Torah. When the kol Yaakov, with the kol of Yaakov is weak, hayadayim yedei Esav, then the hands of Esav are going to be strong. When we Jews are not learning Torah, not doing our bit in the world, Esav will dominate us. The power will be in the hands of Esav. But if the kol is the kol, if it's loud and we're keeping our Torah mitzvot like we're supposed to, like we're created to, then he will not succeed. Then the West will not dominate us. Then Esav will not come. A beautiful, beautiful idea. The understanding we're put into this world, Hashem created the world only for Talmud Torah. We said yesterday in the share, the world's created for me. And Rav also said that if for one second there was no Torah being learned, the world will go back to its original form of Tohu Vavohu. And you see this beautifully illustrated in the following idea. The first pasuk in the Torah is Bereshit bara Elokim et hashamayim ve'et haaretz. You look at that pasuk and it consists of 7 words and 28 letters. Very, very special combination. Why is it so special? If you search throughout the Torah, you'll only find one other pasuk that has 7 words and 28 letters. So first, understand what the significance of these numbers are. 7 always like denotes the physical world. 7 days in the week, 7 colours in the rainbow, 7 notes on the music scale, 7 cycles in the Shemitah, v'chulu v'chulu. And 28 is koach, is force, power, energy. The first time it's used, Bereshit bara Elokim et hashamayim ve'et haaretz. The second time it's used is Vayomer Elokim et kol hadevarim ha'ele lemor. That's in Parashat Yitro. It's the passage which precedes Matan Torah. That's the passage which precedes Aser Hadibrot. Vayomer Elokim et kol hadibrei ma'ele. So what's the connection between these two psukim? The first time a combination is used is when the whole world becomes into existence. And the second time it's used is when the Jewish people receive the Torah, and through the Torah they come into existence as a nation. Therefore the whole purpose of the creation of the world, Bereshit Bara, is connected to the receiving of the Torah. They were put in this world only for the sole reason of studying Torah and understanding HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the best way possible. Good Shabbos.